Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Fairly quiet in here today. What's up with that? Present at the table today are Senator Fairclough, Senator Meyer, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, and Senator Bishop, I think, are both in a meeting with the governor. They'll probably join us a little bit later. It is February 1st, for the record, and we're going to hear from the Alaska Energy Authority. We have a few guests today, and Sarah Fisher-Goad, would you please come up? And if you want to bring your people up, then that's fine with me. And if you would all just introduce yourself for the record, I'd appreciate it. Emily, you don't want to come up? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Sarah Fisher-Goad, the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority.
And for the record, Sean Scaling, Deputy Director of Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency.
Morning, Sean. You're going to give us a bit of a presentation here today, and obviously this is a hot topic in the legislature, and we're all ears, so.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have given a similar overview of the Alaska Energy programs in Senate Energy. However, we did tailor this to have more emphasis with respect to the Renewable Energy Fund and some of the metrics with respect to the projects that we are working on. The one thing I wanted to point out, besides the PowerPoint that was provided to the committee yesterday, we have a spreadsheet that Mr. Scaling will go through with respect to results of the Renewable Energy Fund. And then also something new that we've done and we've developed with the Office of Management and Budget is we've put together a chart that shows the various energy programs that are being managed through the Alaska, through the state programs, through Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and the Alaska Energy Authority, in addition to some of the other programs that are through the Department of Commerce, and also the identification of ADA's new SETS program. So we thought this would be a good chart to start using to let everybody know where a lot of the energy programs that you've been funding over the years, where they're being housed in. This one includes information with respect to some funding information for FY14.
Thank you.
The Alaska Energy Authority's mission is to reduce the cost of energy, and we have several different strategies that we use to do this. We are leading up the effort on energy planning and policy. We provide technical and community assistance. We do develop, we own and construct energy infrastructure. We also build energy infrastructure in rural communities for their benefit. We build them for communities and then essentially grant the finished product to the community or the rural utility. And in general, our primary emphasis and strategy to reduce the cost of energy is really to diversify Alaska's energy portfolio. And the Renewable Energy Fund has been one of the primary ways that we've been doing that. So we added a couple slides here just to give a little bit of perspective on where electrical generation is in the state. There, as you can see, you know, the Rail Belt region, which has approximately 80% of the population, is, of course, also where most of the generation occurs in the state. And with that, one of the other slides that we wanted to make sure folks understood, too, is the electrical prices by community. And, of course, the Anchorage area in the Rail Belt area has some of these the lower electrical costs, but the rest of Alaska, mostly rural Alaska, has significantly higher rates. And it also correlates, too, with the higher rates are also some of those less populated areas of the state. And we also wanted to make sure that it was noted, too, that, of course, as this committee is familiar with, and we have had a lot of discussions already this legislative session, is heating costs are particularly disparate from the state, where, of course, the areas of the state that are served with natural gas have significantly lower heating costs than other areas of the state. So one of our new directives this year has been an additional emphasis on energy policy development and coordination. The The AEA management team is now includes a deputy director of statewide energy policy development, and that is Gene Terrio, and he has been working on leading our effort and working on coordination of various policy development issues in the state. We are also coordinating a variety of energy plans in the state of Alaska. We led the effort for the Rail Belt Integrated Resources Plan and the Southeast Integrated Resource Plan. We are also now in development of various regional plans, more being led by the regional economic development organizations in the state. And so we've been working with a variety of regions to further develop going from the energy pathway that was developed a couple years ago by AEA to a regional effort to help kind of coordinate beyond just the communities, but more of a regional look at energy planning. So again, this is a little bit more of the information on the regional energy planning that we are doing. We are looking at the community-based projects, looking at specific items that we think could help on a regional basis, looking at whether transmission efforts could help reduce the cost of energy and coordinate some of these efforts through by connecting communities with transmission to sometimes have a larger powerhouse in one community, but then also be able to transmit the power with the transmission to other closer communities. So some of the infrastructure projects that many of you are familiar with that AEA owns, we have the Bradley Lake Hydro Electric Project, the Alaska Intertie, and we are working on the effort to build the Susitna-Watonna Project, and that was authorized 2 years ago in Senate Bill 42. It allowed AEA to move forward with that project to own and operate that project. In addition to the infrastructure that we currently own, Alaska Energy Authority did also build the Four Dam Pool projects, which now are owned by the local utilities. Terror Lake is owned by Kodiak Electric Association. Solomon Gulch project is owned by Copper Valley Electric Association. And the Southeast Alaska Power Agency owns the Swan Lake and Tyee Lake projects that serve Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan. We also built and owned, but now is in local control, the I want to say Old Harbor. It's Larson Bay, the Larson Bay Hydroelectric Project. So our rural energy emphasis has been on bulk fuel storage facilities and rural power system upgrades. And these are a lot of the projects that we built. We built them for the last 12 years primarily with Denali Commission funds. So that was a federally driven program. However, most recently, with the continued effort to build power systems and tank farms, the state of Alaska, through our capital budget, has funded AEA to continue this program. And these are the projects that we primarily will build with AEA oversight and grant the project to the community. So they do go into local control. However, AEA is there to help originally build that, and then through circuit rider program and technical assistance, we do continue to offer assistance to make sure the projects are operated. We provide technical assistance for maintenance, and we are there to continue to help with the technical assistance on the project, including the integration of renewable resources into those systems. So we do have an effort to make sure that we can introduce wind and have a good, effective wind diesel system in communities. We have also increased our technical assistance program this past year. In particular, we were funded for two additional positions to really help advance and work with the smaller rural communities to help advance projects, to make them project ready, and to help develop good projects that could be eligible and benefit from the Renewable Energy Fund. So in addition, our rural energy program includes the Power Cost Equalization Program. This is a state-funded program that serves rural communities that have costs of power 3 to 4 times higher than urban Alaska. This project or program is funded and managed by both the RCA that establishes the PCE rate and the Alaska Energy Authority, which manages the funds and pays the utilities for that those payments. And this program was originally developed. I had mentioned that we had owned and operated the Fordham Pool projects. This program was developed around the same time as the development of the Fordham Pool projects in the mid-80s. And it was, in many respects, a recognition that we do have some small communities with diesel-driven systems that have high costs, that this is an effective way to provide some assistance where a large infrastructure project may not be economic to build in a community. So this program does pay for a portion of the utility bills for residential customers and for community facilities. The PC endowment currently has a balance of approximately $788 million, and the approximate PCE payments per year are about $40 million for the program.
So, Mr. Chairman. Senator Hoffman.
Regarding the PCE fund, you know, I believe that the rate of return that's expected is quite high, and is that in legislation?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yes, the legislation or the statutory requirement is to have the fund invested in a manner that earns 7% over time.
And my concern, Mr. Chairman, is that as a result of the high expected rate of return, the department, I believe, has to take on additional risk that could potentially have high years but potentially lower years. And I would say that the rate of return should be between 4.5% and 5%, and I think that's a fix that needs to be addressed. Thank you, Mr.
Senator Hoffman, and I don't remember the legislation or the statutory language. So it was actually put in statute that it would be invested at 7%. You're claiming it needs to be about 4.5%, and in the interim, there has been some low,
right,
obviously some low times. So you're saying we need to put some money in to balance that?
No, I think the legislation needs to be changed just to change the rate of return. You know, I believe that the fund, when we put in the additional $400 million a couple of years ago, could adequately address it, but it would change the investment strategy to be more realistic with the markets that we have today. And I believe that we need to see if that can be changed to a more realistic rate.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you. I agree that the rate of return creates an incentive for higher risk projects. I'm wondering if we're going to look at it, whether we should open it up and allow it to be invested similarly to the permanent fund instead of stating a specific 3 to 4% return, which is what's happening out in the market and would produce a lower risk investment portfolio. But depending on the size of the fund, it's nice to have some things in higher risk and let the money managers actually do that based on the appropriation. So if I totally support Senator Hoffman's intent there, I just would say that it should be flexible. Instead of us setting it at 4%, we should allow money managers to weight the fund for higher risk so that they can stabilize a payout on the fund.
Go ahead, Senator Hoffman.
Yes, thank you, Senator Fairclough. And I would agree with that. You know, I think that giving flexibility because times do change would be the best approach.
Senator Hoffman, I'll need to talk with my co-chair about this, but I'd be happy to have a committee bill sponsored if you wanted to have it drafted. We'll have to discuss this further.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question to the director. What kind of effect would this have on the payout if we were to go ahead and put in statute that the interest rates were going to be decreased down to 4.5% to 5%? What's going to be the effect on the end user, the person that's out there in Savunga or Diomede or someplace like that?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the investment strategy that's in statute is it operates a bit differently than actually the payout of the program. The fund is, first of all, the fiduciary of the fund to manage the fund is the Department of Revenue. Although this is an AEA-owned asset, as a fund, revenue is responsible for investing the fund. So we will be happy to work with revenue and make sure that we can provide the impacts of different investment strategies of the program. But the investment strategy is slightly different than the payout process. The fund is statutorily required at this point to be invested to earn 7% over time, but the payout process is a three-year monthly average market value of up to 7% over time. So although there's fluctuations in that investment earnings over that time, it is a market value fund over 3 years. I guess, for example, the $400 million that was placed into the fund last year, FY14 is the first time that we're seeing that additional injection of cash into the endowment actually impact the funds available from the endowment for the program. The legislature has fully funded the PCE program for many years. It's been a long time since we've had to prorate the payout of the program. And FY14 is the first time that we're seeing the $400 million actually work into the amount available from PCE. It's been a mixture, and this year it continues to be a mixture of general fund and endowment funds. And this year, the general fund portion of the $400 million estimated to manage the program and pay is $7 million. So it's slightly different. There isn't a connection, but the payout amount and changing the investment strategy is a different equation that the legislature looks at each year.
Just a follow-up.
Senator Olson?
So just to put in simple terms that they can understand for the people watching on gavel to gavel, would that change in the statute cause the power cost equalization to have less participation or more participation? What would it do to the end user out there? Can he expect less on his electric bill or more on his bill?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, that should remain the same. The amount that is required to fund the program will remain the same. It may just change the mix of the of what funds the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
For the record, Senator Dunleavy has returned from his meeting with the governor, and he is present at the table. Senator Meyer, and then Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When do we anticipate that the PCE endowment fund will be self-sufficient, where no more general funds are needed?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it would be FY16 would be the year that the endowment, based upon current projections, would be able to fully fund the PCE program. That's that three-year cycle. And depending on what the earnings are for this last year, it could be next year. However, I think the impact is really in FY16.
Okay, thank you,
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One comment and then a question. In regards to the sustainability of the fund, that is why Senator Hoffman is bringing up the high rate of return, because as the markets have become volatile, if we're pushing investors to go risky, we could see a substantial loss, which would mean more GF funding for a longer period of time. So we certainly could look at payout also at that point. And there is a way to secure a flat payout if that was the intent also. But right now it's a model that can actually provide more if once the fund is whole and moving forward. Just a comment. It can provide less too. But on slide 9, you say that the RCA sets the rate, and I'm wondering, is that included in slide 4, or when we're looking at slide 4 and we look at the rest of Alaska, which I really appreciate this graph because it visually lets the community of Anchorage and maybe Southeast, if those are the lower bars on the chart, recognize the magnitude of what other families are paying in other areas of our state. So in this graph, is power cost equalization reflected, or are those raw numbers of what people are charged for?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I believe that this is just the raw numbers. This is prior to the PCE impact of the program. And one thing to note on the electricity prices in communities, the PCE program actually only impacts about a third of the kilowatt hours in eligible communities. It is paying for a portion of residents' electricity bills and the community facilities. It does not cover anything that folks would use above 500 kilowatt hours, and it does not include commercial customers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Again, for the record, Senator Bishop has joined us. He also has returned from his meeting with the governor. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Sarah, go ahead.
So another program that AEA does manage is the Power Project Fund. It is a program that offers lower interest loans to develop small-scale power facilities. We can also fund bulk fuel storage facilities and renewable projects. We have approximately $35 million in the fund, of which half of those funds are in an application process. We currently have pending applications for the City of St. George for a wind diesel system, Haida Energy for the Reynolds Creek hydroelectric project. This fund does require legislative approval for any project that would receive state assistance of more than $5 million. So even if a loan is under $5 million, if an entity received a grant for the same project, if they received a $4 million grant and would like a $2 million loan, we would need legislative approval in order to process that loan. So I'm going to turn it over now to Sean Scaling, our Deputy Director of Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency, to work to lead the conversation on his programs. And I want to say, you know, the new Deputy Director. He's been on board for less than a year and helped lead the effort of the Round 6 of the Renewable Energy Fund program. So we're very happy to have Sean here. He was our prior to that, our program manager for the energy efficiency program. So,
go ahead, Sean.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Senator Hoffman.
Before we do that, I would like to acknowledge that Sarah Fisher Goad, during the first 5 years, has done a remarkable job in steering the alternative energy program, and it's glad to see that we have continuity on that end. We did extend the program for another 10 years last year, and I would just like to acknowledge that she has done an outstanding job there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair and Senators, pleased to be here, especially because we have some good news to share. It makes it a lot easier when we're coming with some good results under the belt. So I'll be talking a little bit about the energy efficiency programs first and then the Renewable Energy Fund. And that's by design, actually. We generally think energy efficiency first because it doesn't make a lot of sense to build energy-producing plants and whatnot to only send the energy into buildings that are inefficiently using it. So we do think energy efficiency first. We do have a state goal of energy efficiency of 15% by 2020, set by the legislature a few years ago. And we are keeping that in mind as we're looking for opportunity and the areas of greatest impact that we can provide. So AEA has a number of programs that are making inroads. The one that's significant, because a lot of people see it, is the AlaskaEnergyEfficiency.org website and the partnership. It's a partnership of many, many agencies co-led by AEA and Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And the focus on that group is to get the word out so people can help themselves with efficiency. There are 20,000 commercial buildings, even more residential buildings, and it's an education effort to help everybody help themselves. It's smart money spent. A couple of programs that we do run the Alaska Commercial Energy Audit Program has recently started. This is for privately owned commercial buildings. We coordinate closely with HFC on all the programs that we provide so that we provide services to all the sectors. So one of our areas is the commercial area, also small industrial, and public buildings through the village, public buildings in rural areas, especially through the Village Energy Efficiency Program. The difference between those two, the commercial and the village program, is the commercial provides just the energy audit, and then the customer is responsible for actually implementing the measures themselves, which of course is the expensive part. The Village Energy Efficiency Program provides the full service audit and changes, energy efficiency changes. In the last few years, we've seen activity. We've managed activity in 132 communities, touching 419 buildings. For a good visual of this, we actually have another website that's a map, akenergyefficiencymap.org. You start at the state level and you see a dot on every community that has activity going on. And then you can zoom into the community level and then even deeper to the actual building level. So it's very transparent. You can see exactly what's going on. So it looks really impressive when you see all those dots. But in reality, we have to remember that there are 20,000 buildings in the sector, and we've touched 419 in the last couple of years. A lot of that money was provided, or a lot of that progress was provided through the stimulus money. And we've just wrapped that up. And the neat thing is we're seeing some great results. The third bullet down there showing some of the return on investment that we're seeing. So for every dollar that was put into those areas on average, there's a 29-cent immediate gain, immediate energy savings, 300% return on investment after 10 years. And many of those measures will last well longer than 10 years, especially in rural Alaska. On the commercial energy audit program, we're seeing things that Alaska Housing Finance is also seeing, about 30% savings, 33% savings potential, and that's just the measures that pay for themselves in a comfortable manner. There's actually deeper measures you can do, but 30% is a pretty good number. Thanks. Here's one highlight. Community of Amonic got what we've been calling the whole village retrofit. They got a little bit of the Village Energy Efficiency Program funding and Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant Program. That was our stimulus program, or the stimulus funded program. So overall, some of the results are there. You know, they're seeing in that small community $90,000 a year in annual savings, 27% from electric. Most of it's coming on the heat side. The return on investment in this particular community isn't as high as the previous numbers. It's actually factored into that average. One of the reasons is one of the buildings in particular, although really a couple of them, once we got in to do some repairs, there were some deeper repairs needed. The floor was actually coming apart in one place, and the air was, you know, coming up from frost heaving, and so it took quite a bit more to get that settled. But my understanding is the employees were quite uncomfortable to begin with, and now they're quite comfortable. And actually, it's the same building that has those boilers there, the before and after picture. You can see before the boilers have been parted out. They were not functioning very well at all. And then after, they've got some nice equipment that's going to last a long time and provide comfortable and efficient heat. Local labor, I should mention too, it was another foundation of those programs. We really reach out to hire local labor whenever possible. Next one.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you. On slide 13, as we invest in smaller communities, is there a labor force that's being left behind trained to be able to maintain the current units?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, that's a great question. And yes, through all the activities since 2008, AEA and HFC have been doing a lot of training. Just one example is in the commercial energy audit program, for example, which is rural and urban. To begin with, I think we had, you know, three or five certified energy auditors, and now there are something like 50. And so the workforce really has been trained up in the local areas too, especially through the Village Energy Efficiency Program. One of our contractors is really good about going in on the lighting retrofits in particular, training up the local staff on whatever buildings they're paying for, and then they can take those skills and take it to other buildings.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Specifically in Amonic, with the new systems for, these are significantly different systems Is there labor available in the community so that if there is regular maintenance needs, that someone is employed to be able to keep it up and running for the community?
That's through the chair, Senator Fairclough. That's a great question, one that is an ongoing challenge. Through this program in particular, the local employees were trained side by side with the contractors that were installing on maintenance and whatnot. Still, that's there's still additional need there. We in HFC and Denali Commissioner have been looking into that and what we can do to further enhance.
Mr. Chairman, before I have a follow-up with Senator Fairclough, Senator Bishop, let me put you on the spot. Mm-hmm. You probably know the answer to some of this. I know there are programs in the state through the university and other organizations that are doing specifically building maintenance in rural Alaska, building and I believe power plant maintenance. Can you enlighten us any, or maybe not?
Thanks. That's right in my wheelhouse. So,
former Commissioner Senator Bishop, go ahead.
Because you know, I'm going to be real succinct because I could break down later in our
not you
in our group, but and tell you. Yes, you know, one of the things to answer all of the questions and particularly Senator Fairclough's, I know where she's going. Great questions. That's one of the things that. I don't like using the word I, but we did at Labor is interface with AEA, AHFC, Denali Commission, the Home Builders Association, all those entities, and we all came together. You know, we've got a $3.6 million energy grant at the Department of Labor from U.S. Department of Labor. We've leveraged funds from the federal dollars, Denali Commission dollars, state GF dollars that you folks so generously supported me with at the Department of Labor. I can drive down into that roadmap and show you where those dollars are going. Senator Hoffman's district in Bethel with the energy efficiency trainings that we provided on site. One area that really was important to me, and if you might remember from my former testimony from the at Abtec, we now have the Northwind 100 wind turbine on site, right, and it's integrated in with our diesel program, and not to belabor the point, but now we're bringing those kids in, working with AVEC money from Denali Commission to train our people in Seward and not have to send them to Massachusetts to get the training and have the local knowledge in the state. So, yes, are we hitting every nut and bolt? No, because there's some technical, you know, in time, because Senator Fairclough, she identified the two different burners right here. This one here is a system 2000. It's like a boiler. It's very state-of-the-art. It's very efficient. It, you know, you're not going to get an individual up to speed 100% to do the A to Z on that boiler in an installation period. Over time, that person will learn that knowledge because this boiler has idiosyncrasies like any model. So the answer is yes, we've done a lot at the department, bringing all training assets together, and I'll be quiet, sorry.
Senator Fairclough?
Passionate about it.
Senator Fairclough had a follow-up, and then Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where I was going was to a question to ask if we're standardizing the units that we're placing in rural communities so that we do have someone that we can bring up and that we can train individuals in local communities by having a roving person that would handle either the same series of products that we're placing in communities or at least something similar so that we can make sure smaller communities that we're investing in can actually use the product. Because state-of-the-art in Anchorage that you can ask five people to repair, you know, at on different corners is very different than someone going dark in a Monic and having weather not be able to let a person come in. So I'm wondering if in the process of criteria as we look at investing in communities and in specific models, whether we're trying to somehow create a portfolio that can be managed from a maintenance perspective by the same type of maintenance.
I just want to go ahead, Sean. Oh, go ahead, Senator Bishop.
Just one quick follow-up, and it goes along the lines of Senator Fairclough's comments and questions. But as you know, someone that's traveled rural Alaska a lot, some of the things that I've seen in the villages, and I'd like the AEA to keep this in mind, and you probably already are, but Some villages, and depending upon how the funding stream comes in, they'll get a worcesteria built that they can't afford to operate after it's built. And I would like to see us all take into consideration the local community's expertise in the size and needs of a worcesteria, so when it is built, they can afford to operate it after it's done. Thank you.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. I'm a little bit lost track. Sean, did you answer Senator Fairclough's question?
No, I can.
Do you mind, Senator Hoffman, if we get through
yes,
this?
Fine.
Okay, go ahead, Sean.
I have three pieces of this. The simpler systems are being installed, and we are very clear with the contractors that simpler systems have to be installed for consistency or for easy maintenance. Secondly, we are seeing a lot of the same equipment going in. Toyo stoves, for example, are very popular, and you know, seeing the same equipment time after time after time makes it easier to maintain, even part out stoves years down the road when necessary. And my final point, and then Sarah may have something as well, I'm not sure, is there's an effort called RAMP, and I'm worried now I'm not going to remember what it is. Rural Alaska Maintenance Program. And the concept is the schools have equipment that need to be maintained, the public buildings have equipment that needs to be maintained, the powerhouse, the water system, they all have needs. And typically, there may not be folks in the community that can fill all those needs. And so the effort, although it's a challenging one, is to try to have different tiers of employees be able to touch all the equipment in various areas. Now, there are significant challenges with that, but it's a concept, and there's a training module being set up and considered in different levels of experience, so that maybe in the village itself you can have a level one, and then in the hub community you might have a level two that can do the deeper maintenance. So it's an effort afoot. It's I don't think we're there yet.
Sure, Sarah and Sean, how much is the university helping you out on this, the training on this?
Mr. Chairman, the university, our training programs for our power projects and bulk fuel and some of the renewable, our partnership is primarily with the Department of Labor through the training programs and the use of the Avtec facilities, and then also Department of Labor trainers have also done some itinerant training and have gone out to communities. The university system, we have a pretty strong partnership with the Alaska Center for Environment and for Energy and Power with respect to the EETF program. I don't think the university system is as ingrained with our training program. However, our other partners include, as Sean mentioned on the RAMP program, the Denali Commission is leading up that effort with ANTHC, and Alaska Village Electric Cooperative has also been involved in those discussions about more regional-led training efforts. And I do want you to know that, I mean, with training, and this is an opportunity for me to recognize Sandra Muller, the AEA Deputy Director of Rural Energy. This is something that, you know, for 2013, as we start talking about what our goals are this year, my goal has been, and Sandra and I have talked quite extensively about making sure through our technical assistance and our training that we do now, that we make sure that we look at that, make sure it's being as cost effective and providing as much of an impact as possible. And so I know, you know, we've had specific training power plant and advanced power plant trainings at Seward, but we are looking at different ways to deliver that, including making sure that the folks that will be operating the system are working more closely with us and our contractors to actually build the systems. And so we're looking at that on a couple pilot programs to bring folks into Anchorage to help with the actual construction of the powerhouses.
You might want to get with Fred Villia at the university. I'm sure you've met him. Because Avtec does a really good job, and the Department of Labor does a really good job. They don't have assets in multiple communities and hubs like the university does. And there was, in the early 2000s, a shift in the university's focus to workforce development, and specifically for rural Alaska. and you might see if you can tap in on that. I think one of the great training program that it had, Senator Bishop, did you ever see that virtual welder? It was an amazing thing. And I'm not saying they would have a virtual boiler or anything like that, but there are people in the world that are just really breaking down barriers for training, and it is allowing us to deliver training to rural Alaska. And you just might see some of the people at the university, they're really on the cutting edge. Senator Bishop, excuse me, we had to go to Senator Hoffman here.
Oh, yeah. Yes, Mr. Chairman, a couple of points of concern that Senator Fairclough have that I'd like to make. Number one, you know, in the slide up there, it says that they use local labor. And this does a couple of things. You know, I think that the community, once they are participating in the construction of any of the facilities out there, they take more pride in the final product, and therefore they take better care of the product. So, and as well as understanding how they work, they might not have the complete knowledge to maintain them, and that's where, as Sarah Fisher Goad had mentioned previously, we have the Circuit Rider Technical Assistance Program. I don't know if that I know the success of that program because it helps save infrastructure that costs thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars to install, and if they fail, it's going to take a lot more to replace them instead of having the circuit rider go out there and assist them. So I guess my question is, do you feel that the Circuit Rider Technical Assistance Program is adequately staffed up?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I believe that we have the capability to provide a very effective circuit rider program. The addition of the staff and funding last year provided us the funds to be able to do a very effective circuit rider program. And in addition, when we do go out to a community to help with the operations and maintenance, and even any type of the emergency responses that we do incorporate a training element with that. We are always working with the local power plant operator and making sure that they understand the equipment and are working hand in hand with us with either the repair and the operation and maintenance.
I think, and Senator Hoffman was trying to get, I think, at a budget line that we might mm-hmm. see before us. And do you need more money in the circuit rider program? Yes or no?
Mr. Chairman, I believe with the funding that was provided for FY13 and FY14 is maintaining that level. I think that is sufficient for our program, and that was a significant increase to our program in FY13 that we're very very grateful to be able to have that opportunity to provide more of that training.
Thank you. Okay, I've lost a little track here. Were there any other questions pending? Proceed, Sean.
Thank you. We also publish an annual energy statistics report. This report summarizes the electric generation across Alaska throughout the year. It's actually a treasure trove of information if you're ever looking for energy information. So that is published annually. We have the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, which is relatively new, created through SB 220. $8.9 million were available, half Denali Commission funding, half state. The first round was a competitive process. We selected 16 projects. The goal of this is essentially as a stepping stone to renewable energy and energy efficiency. People often forget that. Technologies that may be breakthrough, that may have a real impact in Alaska in the future, but aren't quite commercial yet. So we've funded 16 projects. They're all just getting started now. The bullet there mentions that commercially viable is one of the main focus points. The projects are spread throughout the state, and it really runs the gamut from, you know, there's a very relatively simple exhaust thimble to, you know, you can see this airborne wind generator. The concept there is with little impact on the ground, you can send it up in the air, and even if there's not much wind at the ground level. There is wind up above. So it's something that's being tested.
Yeah. Looks neat, doesn't it?
And so that really runs the gamut. Now let's delve into the Renewable Energy Fund. So I, as you know, just started leading this one through this round six recommendations, which you have in front of you now. I worked side by side with staff that ran this program, and yet I didn't know the complexity and the detail to which it goes. So I'm quite impressed. We've got a good staff, and these get thoroughly vetted. So it's just my perspective stepping in. We currently have 227 projects approved, $202 million allocated to those. The bullet there says more than 60 projects currently under construction. It's actually more like about 75, and a couple of those are multi-grants, and so it's actually more like 80 grants are now in construction phase. And I should pause and make sure everybody realizes that we do go stepwise. We don't jump right to construction not knowing that it's going to work. So we ask that applicants come in first with a feasibility study. They could have self-funded the feasibility, or they could do that in an earlier round. And so there's been some lead up of feasibility studies so that we know that these projects are going to work, and then design and construction, and then getting into construction. So the rubber's really hitting the road now, and there's a graph coming up that demonstrates that nicely.
Sean, before you go any further, by the time you get to the next graph, I think we're going to have to cut it off. And if we could get you to come back and talk to us later, the bells are ringing for Senator Hoffman.
Before you continue, I have the question. The governor's goals on renewable energy, and you know, I know that in the legislation that we passed, we said a target of about $50 million annually, and the governor comes in around 25. But what are the governor's goals for renewable energy, and where do we stand in relation to that today?
The governor's and legislature's set goal for energy is 50% renewable energy on the electric side by 2025. We're currently, hydro changes each year. It's at currently about 22% hydro. This is a breakthrough year just in the last couple of months. Some big wind projects have come online, so they're contributing about 2% now. So 20 to 24% is where we're at.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, just so I understand, are we wrapping up now? Should I?
We could. I would like you to come back and finish your presentation sometime if you could work with staff to figure scheduling. Were there any questions from the committee? Further questions? My apologies that we had to cut you off here, but let's get back and finish this conversation, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, anything further before the committee? Hearing none, we're adjourned. Option, okay. Adjourned.